Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe, and I'm glad you're with us today. As most of you have heard me say this before, but I'll just go over it with you a little bit, and that is that Central Coast Voices really has a key goal, and we hope it's a key goal you share, and that is to basically bring credible, valid information and insights about the diversity of our community from diverse members of our community. And we are a product and a part of Action for Healthy Communities, which is an arm of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County, doing its best to basically bring credible information and broad information about what the nature of our community is to as many places as possible. Action for Healthy Communities produces a report every 3 years called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. The last report came out a little over a year ago, and we'll do one again in 2 years. But for right now, I want to let you know that you can get a copy of that report by going to actionslo.org. It's a PDF file. You can get it in portions. It's not all one file, but it's a large 300-plus page report, which gives you a snapshot of San Luis Obispo County and where things are going and where they've been and what's working for people, and then, frankly, in a lot of cases, what's not working for people. But you're welcome to do that, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. We get to talk about something that is fascinating. I want to start by saying I want to thank the New Times. This is a show we were looking at putting together because, among other things, one of my guests today is Angela Totti, who is the new executive director of Arts Obispo, and we wanted to do an Arts Obispo show. And then the New Times got hold of something about public art, or rather they got, I'm not quite sure how it all evolved, but they found a few people who decided that public art could be a nuisance. My words, not theirs. And so the issue of public art and how it fits into our community becomes part of this discussion. And so I thank the New Times for, stirring the pot and bringing that to our attention. So our guests today are Angela Totti, who's the new executive director of Arts Obispo, and Melissa Mudgett, who is the San Luis Obispo City Public Arts Coordinator. I realize that may be a stretch for some of you. Yes, she is a government employee who specializes in coordinating public art. That's the kind of community we have here. That's what makes that kind of a nice make this a nice place to live, and it's kind of amazing. And then we also have with us Alan Root. Alan Root is basically a public art advocate and a public artist. And by the way, someone I have known for about 30 years, and it was nice to see that he was joining us today because he's also a volunteer at Live Oak and does a number of things with that. Want to give you an idea about a couple of things first, and that is if you didn't already know this, this is a community radio station, a public radio station, and this is a community discussion. You can join the discussion by calling us at 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. And I would encourage you, if you want to be part of this discussion, that you join the discussion reasonably early. In other words, those of you who have a tendency to call in at about 8 minutes to two, we generally don't have the time and the opportunity to give you the attention you would like to have to be heard. So I encourage you, if you want to be heard and understood, that you basically consider being part of that as early as you'd like. I'm going to give you a snapshot in my mind about an issue with public art that has been around for a number of years. The piece of art I want to talk about real quickly is still there. By the way, I cannot remember the names of some of my grandchildren, which makes this next bit of information I'm going to give you very important. The piece of art I am talking about is called Garnet. Garnet is a sculpture that sits down by Nepomo Street and Higuera in San Luis Obispo. Garnet has not always lived there. Garnet is a sculpture that, and this is going to be a bad stylization of what it was, but my recollection, the artist that did Garnet, and maybe one of our guests today knows about that piece and who the artist was, because I'm, with all due respect to that artist, I don't recall who the artist is, did a piece about basically, it's a stylized piece that looks somewhat human because it was intended to be human. It was actually a piece that was intended to look female. And it's a piece that has to do with a female form that has had breast cancer. And that was a piece that was intended to be done that way. Now, having said that, you can look at that piece of art and you can consider lots of things about it. And you may not even know that that's what it's about. But Garnet used to live in a public place in Arroyo Grande until a number of people in Arroyo Grande decided that the fact that it had a history of being a piece of art that referenced breast cancer and the removal of a breast by someone who had breast cancer was somewhat offensive to some members of the community. So I'm not quite sure how it happened, but the city of Arroyo Grande decided that they got enough pressure about it that they didn't want it to live there anymore. I'm not quite sure how the city of San Luis Obispo acquired it, but it's lived at Nipomo and Higuera Street, in my recollection, for 10-plus years at least. It may even be almost 20 by now, and no one's complained about it. So, yes, there is public art that one community thought was too offensive to have publicly in their town, and another community has. And not only is it not offensive, but maybe nobody's even noticed that it kind of could have been offensive to somebody. Okay. Having said that, let's start talking to the guests because you're probably tired of listening to me already. Melissa, I want to start out with you because I'd like to get some idea what in the world you have a full-time day job, and your full-time day job is as the public arts coordinator for the city of San Luis Obispo.
Actually, my full-time day job is the manager for the recreation department.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Public art is my side job.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Other duties as assigned. Okay. It has been an amazing part of my position with the city, and I've absolutely enjoyed every bit of it. But it could be definitely a full-time job for somebody, and I do my best in incorporating it within the city and the scope that we work in. Mm-hmm.
You've had probably far more active time in the last month or so than you probably expected to have in that part of your job, because you obviously have some by the way, I've been advised by our good producer that Kate Britton is the artist of Garnet, and I appreciate knowing that because I did not want to do any disrespect to the artist that made the piece. So thank you. So back to the other part of the discussion. So all of a sudden, you have gotten a lot of flack about public art and the fact that some people think things are delightful. Some people think things are wretched. And I'm curious as to how the city weighs all that stuff out. And probably the question that goes in the front of that is the people who are unhappy about a particular piece of art right now, where were they when that art got commissioned? Because I believe most of the art in the city gets commissioned part of it is a review process by Architectural Review and other agencies and such. So it didn't just appear one day because somebody went out with a lot of acrylic paint.
That is true. Okay. Public art is a very long process, and in my opinion, I think it needs to be. It is art for the community, and art is very subjective. And so needing a prescriptive democratic process really helps in defining what is the right piece of art in the right location for the right neighborhood at that right time. So while the process might be a little bit lengthy, I think it really lends itself to providing the best sense of community that we can through public art. It starts with an idea in collaboration with our local arts coalition, Arts Obispo, and local artists, and then we develop, okay, we have some pot of funding that we can work to enhance and create some public art for our community, where would we like to place that? What types of art styles would we like to have? Ultimately, it's the council that approves that location and funding. And once we get the green light from them, then we can work on developing specifications and what type of art we do. There is always an art jury. It's a volunteer process that includes both city members, local artists sit on the board, business neighbors sit on the board. And so it's a very prescriptive process to be a part of an art jury, and they review it for the artistic criteria. But that's not the only step.
Okay.
That's the beginning. And from there, it's another lengthy review process for advisory bodies, which ultimately report back to council. But they review it for building specifications, constructability. Does it fit within the cultural, historical context of a neighborhood? And so each one of these review committees really look at a different aspect of that piece of art. And by the time it gets down to the end of the road and council sees it, we're 6, 8, 10 months down through a review process. Then we work with our artists and get it going, and we're looking at a year, year and a half when art finally comes into a neighborhood. With the utility boxes, that was a good 2 years in the making before art finally appeared to some neighbors in their neighborhoods. But it was a big review process, website, meetings, and everything is public. And we definitely solicit volunteers in all of our processes. And it was a lengthy process and a wonderful one. I have to say I get 99.9% positive reviews about our public art piece. I get calls weekly from artists and other cities asking about when our next phase is going to be, and other cities call to ask about how we can help them develop utility box programs within their cities as well. So highly popular.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, we'll come back to that in a couple of minutes. I want to remind folks that this is a call-in program if you'd like to call in for both questions and comments and observations, and we'd like you to be part of the discussion. The phone number is 781-3875. It's not a requirement that you call in if you're listening to the program, but you're encouraged to do so if you'd like to be part of the discussion. And this is, I would generally assume most of what we're talking about today is a non-controversial topic. However, based upon what our experience has been in the last few months, for some of you it can be a very controversial topic. Now, the fun part about this is, for those of you who don't know, Angela is the new executive director of Arts Obispo. Arts Obispo's been around for a long time, so she's the new kid on the block. So what she's walked into as an arts community is probably not different for her, but at least startling as a way to start out. Give us some background and give us an idea of how you ended up in San Luis Obispo.
Well, actually, I have been working in arts administration for 23 years in California, and I'm actually leaving the Capital Public Radio listening area to you.
Okay. And well, we're glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. I've chosen to relocate to San Luis Obispo because of the richness of the arts community, and it's 5 hours away from my family. My daughters are north of me, and my mother and siblings are 5 hours south of me. I think it's going to be a very lovely place to live and to work, and I'm just delighted in all of the people who I've met. And I actually began working a week ago yesterday, so on April Fool's Day, no fooling. And this morning is the first morning that I woke up here in San Luis Obispo, my new home.
So. Well, we're glad you're here, and You didn't bring controversy with you. A lot of it was here beforehand, and as people who listen to the program know, and some of the other people in the room who've been here for a while know, the controversy comes even with things we don't consider controversial all the time.
Well, I really look at controversy in the arts as a normal thing, and it's less controversy to me than conversation. And if art is evoking conversation, it's doing its job. Whether it's in on a picture that you've selected in your own home over your couch, which you didn't have to work with a committee to select that, but not everybody will like what you've picked to place over your couch. It's very similar in public art, even though there is a very, very thorough process in first developing the art plan, which will be specific to the place that the art will be located, whether it's a permanent piece of art or a temporary piece of art or some other art form. Maybe a lecture series will be put in the public forum, or a poetry series will be put in the public forum. That is designed, the art plan is designed around the use of that space and how the public will interact with that space. And so when the process is said and done and the work is placed, the idea is that people will react to it. There will be a conversation about it. And it's not a need that everybody likes it. It will do its job.
I want to interject. I think if there's a piece of art that everybody likes, it's probably a tremendously boring piece of art.
I don't know. I don't know even a masterwork in the Louvre that you can say everybody likes this.
There's probably somebody someplace who does it, who thinks Rembrandt is a lousy painter or was a lousy painter.
To each his own. Yeah. It's that's the subjectivity of art.
We'll get back to that in a minute. I want to. I don't want to make him stay on the line too long. So, we have a call from Ron. Are you there?
I am here.
Okay. And what is your input or question?
Well, it had to do with your opening statement. I've been living in Arroyo Grande, moved here about almost 24 years ago, and it had to do with the sculpture that was put at the entrance to the historic village of Arroyo Grande. And you indicated that the reason why it left this area was because there were people were upset because it had to do with breast cancer. And that was really not the case. We did not, as I recall, we didn't have a committee such as set up there in San Luis Obispo to review artwork that was going to be placed in a public area. There was a new section of the village. There was a vacant lot there, and they put in some buildings there. And a sculpture was, I guess, hired or what have you, and put that sculpture there at the village. And, you know, it's a beautiful sculpture, but I think your guest had talked about one of the things that they look at is the historic aspect of the area that it's going in. And here you have a village that is historic, and you had a very modern-type sculpture. And you had a reaction amongst the people of Arroyo Grande that it just didn't fit. I personally never heard anybody say, well, it's because it has to do with somebody who suffered breast cancer. The whole thing, the letter to the editors and everything, it had to do with, it just didn't fit in the village. And I think since then, I could be wrong, but I think the city of Arroyo Grande has gotten smart, and they have a committee or what have you to determine art pieces. Now, they did replace it with a time clock, you know, that's in front of the...
There's an old fashioned style city clock there. Yes.
Yes, and okay. So you know, I just make the difference with your statement that we decided here in Arroyo Grande that we didn't like it because it had something to do with breast cancer. That was not.
Ron, I guess I have to just. I want to tell you, I lived in Grover Beach at the time this took place, and I can tell you there were at least two letters to the editor in regional newspapers specifically related to the fact that the nature of the sculpture and the nature of the connection to breast cancer were offensive to those two letter writers. One of them was a breast cancer survivor, and her comments were something along the lines of, I can't even look at myself. Why are you making me look at this art? So my personal opinion is that the fact that it was allegedly somewhat modern art was an excuse for removing it, because there were indeed was a lot of discussion about people who did not like the subject matter.
And again, you know, it's everybody has their opinion, as they do with the piece of art. And I've I've been very happy with the art pieces that have gone up there in San Luis. There really aren't many art pieces down here in the South County, but if we have friends come in, we take them up to San Luis, and we have a habit of going down there and showing them some of the pieces of artworks, whether it's down near the theater or the one at the corner of Napomo and Higuera.
Yeah. Well, I thank you. You're entitled to your view on it. I think we have a drastically different view on it, and that's okay, but I appreciate your input also.
I'm all glad to hear about it, yeah. Because I can look forward to meeting the new committee in Arroyo Grande to see what they put together in the way of vetting art. And it sounds like for them it was a learning opportunity in that community.
And actually there's an element of this we probably didn't talk about, and with due respect to Ron, it may be a factor that was in Arroyo Grande that we didn't broach, and that was the piece of art in Arroyo Grande, when it was in Arroyo Grande and where the clock is now, is actually on private property. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure how it became an acceptable part of a private project, and Melissa might have some insight on this to add, and that is when art is for a public space and government dollars, if you will, are paying for part of it, is that dealt with a lot differently than if I happen to own, well, let's assume I'm the owner of the downtown center in San Luis Obispo and I want to put a piece of art in that space. Is McQueen's piece Puck, I think, is what's part of that space, which is private property. Does art get adjudicated the same way for publicly owned property as it does for a private piece of property, even though it's a public viewed space?
Yes and no are the answers to that. And so art can come into San Luis Obispo in three different ways. So we can have private art donated to us. We can have developers that choose to incorporate the art as part of their project. Or we can have developers that choose to pay the in-lieu fee, which goes into a public art fund, of which is a pot of money that then I deal with within the city parameters to get art. And so there's three avenues. They all have the same art jury review process. And there's a little bit more flexibility on the private or developer side when it comes in as far as what type of art they're soliciting and how they do a call for artists. Or if they already have a purchased piece. But the review process and the criteria it needs to meet remains the same.
Okay. Thank you. Alan, we have not let you be part of this discussion yet, and I don't want you to feel left out, but I don't think you ever feel left out because you like me, always have an opinion about something. So, but where do you come in this process? I mean, I've always known that you're involved in art, but I've not necessarily known how much that's public art.
Well, my first public art project was in 1996, and it was in Palm Desert, California. And since then, I've completed, I think we've completed 13 public art projects that were competitions. Working in a lot of different jurisdictions with a lot of different styles of art programs, I can say that the one that we have here in San Luis is my favorite. In Palm Desert, for instance, they call a committee together that serves for a year. So that same committee looks at every project. In San Luis Obispo, the jury's made up of neighbors and local business owners and people that do have an interest in what goes there.
Is there any of your work on public display in San Luis Obispo?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Yeah. Communities Bridge was a piece that we did when the Higuera Street Bridge got rebuilt in downtown. It was originally located next to a parking lot near the corner of Osos and Higuera. And after the construction of the downtown center, they were relocated to the Parks and Rec office.
Okay. So it's that as you said that, I kind of smiled. It's like, gee, every artist wants to. It's like kind of like, gee, I'd like to buy this picture and I'm going to hang it in my bathroom. So it's you get a piece of your art up, but it's next to a parking lot. I'm glad they moved it away from the parking lot.
Well, yeah, there's benefits to both of those sites. Actually, it was The benches were well used at Farmer's Market and stuff downtown, but they're in a good spot now.
Yeah.
Also, Perpetual Hope is a sculpture that's in Mitchell Park, and Fragmentary Blue was a really wonderful kind of a hybrid project. It crosses a seasonal creek on Sacramento Street next to the Producer's Dairy.
Oh, didn't
and that. That was a marriage of art money and money for new railings that the developer was committed to, and some public money and located on public land.
Well, that, as you mentioned where that is, because a lot of our listeners are not in San Luis Obispo, of course.
Sure.
My first thought about that is that's not obscure spot, but that's a spot that's mostly available to a rather finite small community who's around that area. Hadn't really thought of public art being neighborhood art, I guess, but then we've been talking about the electric boxes that, right. that have the things on them too.
I think there's a natural kind of hierarchy. The pieces that we're going to select for busier neighborhoods for our downtown core are going to be maybe more sophisticated than those that go in the outlying neighborhoods, but I see no reason to exclude a neighborhood from a public art project.
Yeah. Well, we need parks everywhere, so hopefully we need some things to go in those parks and in neighborhoods. Not everything is downtown. Angela, when you look at a community that you're going to come to, and you came here, and I thank you, I'm wondering what kind of research did you do to see what the art community was like here?
Well, frankly, my first resource was my sister organization, Arts Obispo, because I know county by county in California, an arts council is placed in cooperation with the County Board of Supervisors. And our charge is really the quality of life business to advance visual performing and literary arts, enhancing the community through art. And so I looked right through that lens, and I saw how the connections were made to community, who the organization was already working with. I contacted the Chamber of Commerce to see if there was a leadership program, and there is. I spent 2 weeks exploring, literally driving around the community and talking to people on the streets and eating meals by myself just to see who I would interact with and how the community feels about itself, and I just found it to be very welcoming. People look at you in the eye in this community, and people that I talked to randomly, you know, there was the 6 degrees of separation, the Kevin Bacon thing. It was never far from conversing with one person to discover that somebody had a painter or a poet or a writer or a thespian in their family, and it just made me very excited about the potential in working here. And living here,
yeah. The so your background in arts management, I guess, and that's probably not the best word to use, but
no, that's fine. Okay. Arts management.
Before you came here, what were you doing?
I was doing the same job in another county. Okay. Yes,
By Sacramento.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. About the same size county, or
it's about 100,000 bigger, Placer County, about 357,000. So. This is about the size. San Luis Obispo is about the size of Placer County when I moved there in 1990 from San Diego County.
Yeah, those of us, and I'm the oldest person in the room, so I can say this. Those of us who are older than you are, remember back to a time when public art, other than an occasional, general on a horse someplace. Okay. You had ended up with either a general on a horse somewhere or a large sculpture of Mark Twain.
Right.
It seemed to be that. Those were the two, at least in the Western United States, that's what you got. You
statuary, got either, historical statuary. Yeah. But public art, you really, I'd like for the listening audience to really think about the fact that they are part of public art almost every day, whether they know it or not, and it's found in many places throughout communities. And the best communities actually have intent with their public art. I'm so excited about working with Melissa and San Luis Obispo City's public art program because it's very comprehensive. But if you've flown into any major, flown in or out of any airport, there's a public art project. And it really makes, the Eiffel Tower is public art. It makes you remember a place. Yeah.
I think Alan would appreciate, in Alan's mind, that would be really appreciative to hear that, because the concept of a piece of industrial sculpture as art is, mm-hmm. is right up, that's where
well,
you are. Yeah.
As we're talking about this too, I'm thinking about, what are those projects called? The Depression Era projects.
The WPA,
yeah. You go to Hoover Dam and you look at the cast hinges and the terrazzo floors and the murals, and so you know that was a really wonderful example of putting people to work in bettering the community as a whole.
Yeah, actually, I was in the Coit Tower in San Francisco about 3 days ago, and it's the first time I've looked at that art. As extensively as we did, because there's been an incredible restoration project on stuff that's now over 60 years old.
That's right. Yeah.
The smartest cities and communities are really understanding that public art can be a wonderful part of improving the quality of life and the sense of place. And so a sensible arts program to include public art placement is really important and a good investment. Look at the Sundial Bridge in Reading. People think of Reading
Absolutely.
Differently, very differently now than they did 10 years ago.
Yeah. And my recollection, and I don't remember when it was because I've sort of lost track of time as I've gotten older, is some of the first public art that I recall or that wasn't like statuary in a park was Portland, Oregon. Portland, Oregon was one of the fronts of that. Actually, I can't let it go. I believe that one of the big things in Portland was they had some public sculpture. And as a promotion of it, as kind of an international pay attention to Portland thing, there were some posters that were done. And the caption on the posters were, "Expose yourself to art." And there was a man standing. He was in a trench coat with the trench coat open. And by the way, this is important to say, and I'll get to it anyway. With a trench coat open, but by the way, it was not a risque picture other than you knew he was standing with a trench coat because his back with the trench coat on was to the camera. But that was a good commentary, in my opinion, on getting involved as an advocate for public art, because the man who is in that poster was the current mayor of the city of Portland when those were done.
That's fabulous.
And I think that's probably, I'm thinking that's 30 years ago, 30 to 35 years ago when that first started. And it was, there wasn't a stink about it, but it was indeed, for those of us who don't live in Portland, Oregon, it was something you paid attention to and was very interesting because they were doing all kinds of neat stuff. The city of Santa Rosa, California, where the Peanuts comic strip museum is, through something to do with the Schultz Foundation or the art program there, they provided a series of Peanuts character fiberglass or resin cartoon characters that they then had artists that were commissioned to paint them and to make them. There's one that's a punk rocker. One of them looks like, you know, kind of like a character from Grease. I don't remember what they're all over the city. But they keep a theme going there, so it's communities have latched onto it as a real marker. I think San Luis Obispo is doing a good job with what they're doing. It may never be, oh, this is the place to go specifically just for public art, but there are communities that it's been a big factor in, and Portland and Santa Rosa are the ones that come to mind too. I want to remind you that this is a program that you are invited to, and we would like you to be part of the discussion. The phone number is 781-3875. We're talking about public art. We'll talk a little more about art countywide in San Luis Obispo beyond just public art, but some of the discussions in the media about public art lately have made it one that's been a big factor. In some of the notes that you folks sent to us so we could look at how we wanted to focus this discussion was that there's a misconception that everybody needs to like public art. And I think that may be what we've already broached on, but I guess, do you still, Melissa, do you get a lot of that? I can't believe someone likes this. Why did you put it up?
Actually, no.
Oh, okay.
No. I actually get quite a bit of positive response, and like we said, there are a few people that may come forward with that reaction, but once they learn about the extensive and robust review process that they have, that we have in place in order to get art in the community, for the most part, they jump on the bandwagon, and they're usually my next volunteer in an art jury.
Okay. That's so people who want to get involved, get involved.
Yes, and get involved. Be my volunteer.
Okay. Let's see. We've got Gina. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Yeah, I have a couple of comments, question and a comment. One is that I know we aren't a big urban place in San Luis, but I would like to see more opportunity for graffiti art. Some of the most famous artists, Keith Haring, Basquiat, Banksy, started with graffiti art, and I think it can be good public art when it's well done. And the other question I have is, my son is an artist, and he applied and did not get selected to put a piece of public art in San Luis based on the piece of steel girder that the city got from 9/11. And this art is supposed to have gone in front of the firehouse over there, the main firehouse on Broad and South and Santa Barbara Street. And I haven't seen any action about that. And it's been well over a year, and I know that there were some deadlines that he had noted when he applied, and they seem to have passed. So if you can say anything about the public art project in front of the firehouse, I'd like to know what's up with that.
Well,
and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thank you.
I'm off the phone, on the air.
Okay, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gina. That was a wonderful question, and I'm excited to be able to share with the rest of the community what's going on with that piece. That will be the World Trade Center 9/11 memorial piece. It is to be located in the front of Fire Station 1, which is located off of Santa Barbara Street in San Luis Obispo, and as well as our combined emergency dispatch center, which combines the police and fire department. And I say that because this piece, although 9/11 focused, was intended to honor the 403 first responders, both police and fire, that lost their lives on that tragic day. And so this piece evokes definitely a lot of emotion. An artist was selected through that process. Her name is Kathleen Karakoff, and she is actually kind of a California/Colorado artist and has done multiple memorial pieces throughout the United States. So her focus is definitely on memorial pieces, which sometimes have a different tinge and flair than a public art piece that is designed to evoke maybe a different type of emotion. So we're very pleased with the artist that was selected. We're in the process of engineering and permitting review right now. We hope to have construction this summer, and it will be ready for honoring those when September 11th comes this year. So thank you very much, Gina.
Yeah.
Fred, if I can jump in for a minute.
Go ahead, Alan.
We've completed 13 projects, as I said previously, but I'll bet we've thrown our hat in the ring for over 100. So it's a dicey way to try to make a living. And as well as being an artist, I also sit on the Architectural Review Commission in San Luis Obispo, and we saw the piece that Melissa's talking about come before us, and it's going to be a beautiful piece.
You bring up a very interesting concept with that, though, too, and that is that I suppose if you only submitted because you knew you would win, we would not get much of a stretch on art from any artist. And it's tough to be in a competitive environment. You would like to be able to present a piece that is always going to please someone and going to get made. But sometimes in public art, that obviously doesn't happen.
Well, that's true. But for me, I've actually sat on a couple of the juries here in our community, as well as presented to many of them. And that's one of the interesting things is to see when an agency puts out a request for qualification or a request for proposal, either one of those things, it's really interesting to see because they'll lay out some guidelines of what they're looking for. There was one in down in a Southern California community where they mentioned Neptune three times in the description. I thought, well, I know where they're going with that. So, but inside of those parameters, it's really interesting to see the variety of responses that that a group of artists will bring to that project.
Even with the word Neptune three times, you'll have such variety among the applications.
Yeah. Which brings up another interesting question, and that is, I don't recall if the city of San Luis Obispo has any public art that is water movement based now. Has that been any idea to do that? And maybe there's a piece out there, I just don't know where it is, but.
No, we do not have a water-based piece of art.
I guess technically you might be, you have the bear and the child in the little.
Oh, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. And I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. But I personally happen to, and my family would tell you, if there's water falling, I'll go there. When we travel a lot for waterfalls and things like that. It's like the sound of moving water, and that is. I guess in some larger cities that's been done as public. Mm-hmm. There's a number of public art pieces in San Francisco that involve fountains and things like that.
There are water features and light elements and sound elements and elements of moving art, kinetic art, too, that can be employed in public art. And the water features are often complex, and now with our weather situation in California, public art projects will be a lot more careful in going in that direction.
Good to know. We've talked a lot about the public art here, and I mentioned at the beginning of the program that New Times had done us a big favor because we, to some extent, we wanted Angela to come visit with us, but we also wanted her somewhat off the hook to start answering a lot of questions about a position that she's just assumed. So the New Times giving us something to talk about with regard to controversial art was nice to give you a break, I guess, to some extent. I don't want to pick on the people who have complained and been most vocal about that, but I want to talk about the process again a little bit. And for Melissa, the folks that are unhappy with one of the particular painted electric boxes. I guess it's mostly a part of a signal control device for a traffic signal that's been painted. Did those folks feel like the process had never been made public enough, or were they not involved in the process when it was done, and then they realized after the fact that they weren't happy and they should have been more vocal to begin with? I realize you can't speak for them, so I'm just kind of trying to get a sense of. You know, like if my thought is, if you were unhappy before and you had an opportunity to voice your unhappiness before it ever happened, where were you? And I'm wondering how that process has worked for some folks.
You know, I don't know where they were in that process, and I actually wasn't a part of that process when utility boxes first got painted in the first phase and second phase. So I'm even newer to that process. Mm-hmm. But what I can say and kind of towing off of what Angela said earlier is their feedback, whether negative or positive, but mainly if negative, it's an opportunity to have a conversation. And we took that feedback with, okay, where in the process can we do better at informing the community of opportunities to get involved and where they can be a part of that process as well, and even brought forward to council some enhancements to our public art policy that would address some of that. So it was a wonderful opportunity for us to make some enhancements and have a conversation, and then hopefully we can get more people involved in that process.
Thank you. And I think it's in anything, Alan, having known Alan for a long time, I think I can say Alan and he can speak for himself in a moment, enjoy the fact that if you have a controversial enough topic, you get people paying attention when they weren't paying attention before. And that's come up a lot of times for you.
Yes. Yeah. And it's been said here several times today, but just to start that conversation, I think is really an important thing. And to think that we would ever have a piece of public art in a public place that would be satisfying to everybody is like saying, let's all have fried chicken every day, you know, or let's all listen to the same music. It's a subjective thing.
Mm-hmm. Can certainly understand that as a big factor. Angela, let's talk about some other things that Arts Obispo is doing, because I think that we have maybe sold you short because you're the new kid on the block. The Arts Obispo is not just about the city of San Luis Obispo. It's a countywide organization. There's a number of things that you have going on. Art After Dark is something that that I've had the pleasure of enjoying a number of times, because I don't get into San Luis Obispo during the day that often, except to do my radio program. I happen to – my office is in Atascadero for my business. But it's nice to have evening things to do. There's Art After Dark in San Luis Obispo. There's Art After Dark
in Paso Robles. I was so fortunate to be able to attend both in March. I enjoyed the first Friday Art After Dark, and then the Saturday evening in Paso Robles, and it was wonderful. People of all ages coming out and enjoying the art, interacting with the artists, and enjoying the shops and the restaurants. It was a wonderful, wonderful activity, and it's going 11 months of the year in both locations. And yesterday afternoon, I had the pleasure of meeting the committee who works on the studios tour, which happens in two weekends in October. It's about a 20-member steering committee working with our program specialist, Lori, and delightful group of creative minds, people who had been involved on the tour between 1 and 16 years. And that's going well, that planning. And then this Saturday, we're actually merging Passport for the Arts with an event that has happened in San Luis Obispo for 37 years called Children's Day on the Plaza.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The two will come together. And it's an all-day outdoor, family-appropriate event which will be imbued with the arts.
Well, Children's Day in the Plaza, by the very nature of the name of it, is easy to understand. I'm not sure I'm aware of a Passport to the Arts. So what is the Passport to the Arts
program? So the Passport to the Arts is actually giving permission for participants to engage in hands-on art activities. And we'll have several activities available for children and families to see and to do, to interact, to paint, to draw, to sing, to dance on Saturday. Come on out and find out, Fred. Dip your toe in the water.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. There's another project that you have going that you've walked into, and that is Annie's Dance. And can you tell us about that?
You know, I would love to introduce the subject and then turn it over to Alan, because first of all, Anne Rehm, by all accounts, was a remarkable human being. And I'm delighted to announce we'll be doing a public art legacy project. And in May, take a look at the Arts Obispo website and listen for our messages about contributing to the project. And this is a public art project, so it's appropriate for this show. Now I'd like to have one of the designing artists talk to you about the specificity.
Thank you. Thank you. This has been a really fun ride. Last June or July, a group of probably 30 or 40 people assembled at the Ludwig Center in San Luis to decide how we're going to commemorate the wonderful contributions that Anne Rehm made to our community and to our public art program. And out of that meeting, a group of, six or eight artists started meeting regularly. And we worked out a design, and we've worked out a system of collaborative contribution from the arts community here locally that we haven't found a model for yet. So we're looking for site. We have a fundraising campaign that will start soon. Arts Obispo website's a great place to keep track of that. We have a maquette. We have a design. And we have about 20 artists waiting in the wings for us to develop the base portion, where we'll have teams of artists come and do mosaic and cast concrete and appropriate surfaces so that it's interactive. And the edge of the base, which will be 20 feet in diameter, will have stainless steel plates, engraved with poetry running all the way around it.
Anne was a poet.
Yeah.
She wrote. And I love that this subject has come up for this show because, as I understand it, Anne was at the beginnings of the public art program in San Luis Obispo, and I think you can relate to that, Melissa.
I also came on the heel end of that, and I didn't have the opportunity to have Anne Ream be a part of my life, but I get to enjoy all of the things and foundation that she laid in place with her partnerships with the city and staff and the community. And but for Anne Ream, I don't think the city would have the public art program that we have today.
Yeah.
So I think the crowdsource campaign that we will be mounting in May mm-hmm. will be really something that people will want to be a part of. If they knew Anne Ream, they will want to be a part of it. We're very excited.
Yeah, that's good to hear about. I appreciate that. I guess we've got a couple minutes left. I'd like to give you each a couple of minutes to maybe chat about what's important to you to make sure the community does to stay connected to art.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I send an email to any artist, the end of my email is keep creating. So I'm just going to say that once. And then for our listeners in other counties, San Luis Obispo has sister agencies, our partners in Monterey County, the Arts Council for Monterey County. They're easy to find on the internet if you don't already know about them. And in Santa Barbara, it's the Santa Barbara County Arts Commission. And both organizations are involved in public art and have a wide variety of programs and services for the public. So I encourage you to discover that if you don't already know. And I look forward to meeting you and hearing from you.
Okay, thank you. Alan, well, I'm not, by the way, I'm not going to give you the last word because when you have the last word, you use it too effectively sometimes.
Yeah, you know me too well. Well, you know, public art is such a near and dear subject for me on several levels. I get to eke out a living doing it once in a while, along with my other work. And I get to enjoy the programs that are in place, not only in this community, but places that I visit. It's such an integral part of a vibrant community to be able to have performing arts, visual arts, all that stuff as part of the rich fabric of a community. So I would just encourage the listeners to get involved if you're not and stay involved if you are. There's plenty of places to volunteer. There's plenty of opportunities to play. And let's just keep going.
It's good to hear. Thank you. Melissa, you get almost the last word.
Almost the last word?
Yeah.
Well, I agree with both Angela and Alan here. Being involved and volunteering would be wonderful, and it's great to learn and be a part of that process. And what you do learn when you're a part of that process is just exponential. But if I could just share a personal note, you know, growing up, sometimes people want to be a lawyer, a doctor, a radio broadcaster, you know, whatever you want to be. And growing up for myself, I never really wanted to be anything. I just wanted to make a difference in my community. And what I have found in my position here with the city is fortuitous because public art is what makes a community and it's what makes an impact to people within a community who want to be here, who have a sense of belonging and being. And it never occurred to me until I'm in the position where I can provide that to the community. And I finally found where I make the best impact, and it's public art.
Yeah. Wonderful.
That's good to know. You know, Angela, I'm going to come back to you because actually the three of you have been briefer than most of my guests when it comes to wrap-up remarks, and maybe because you're artists as opposed to public speakers as your day job. What do you see that isn't happening in San Luis Obispo in your brief period of time here that you want to make sure happens?
In your 30 hours?
Yeah. You started this conversation by implying that you came here and researched the community pretty thoroughly, and some of your comments lead me to believe you paid a lot of meticulous attention.
Yes, I think.
So I'd be curious to know what we're not doing that we should be doing?
Well, what I'm excited about is the possibility for increased connectivity between the communities, because there are pockets of artistic communities, sometimes even differentiated by discipline. You know, the writers are in a world here and the dancers in another world and the visual artist here. So there's opportunity to connect the creatives and also increase our ability to market together. And the other thing, speaking organizationally, is we really need a volunteer corps. We have a 9-member board, which can be expanded, but beyond board responsibilities, there are programs in place and programs to come that will be very beneficial to the community, but they need to be volunteer-fueled. And so I'll be looking for involvement and participation, just as you said. And I'll tell you how I went into this. I crossed into this field 23 years ago. From the financial sector. And I put out into the universe that I wanted to work for my community. And this is what I found. It's been my passion and it continues to be. And so discover how enjoyable it is to work within the context of arts and culture.
Yeah. I have, I've never been an artist. I've never been a musician. A lot of our listeners know that I host house concerts in my living room and they say, oh, you're a musician. It's like, no, I'm not. I specifically don't do that. So I can just help be an avenue or a venue to see that happen. And that's, I met Alan as a volunteer at Live Oak a zillion years ago. So that part of the community, I think that art needs spectators. But I think one of the things, if someone asks me what the difference is between how I see the world versus how a lot of other people see the world, and that is I've never been a very good spectator, and I've always wanted to be a participant. And I think that's a good factor, and I think if you can find more people who, even if they're like me, who aren't artists, but can help, because it's nice to be around art, it's nice to be around music, nice to be around theater. Even though there are certain things that happen, like people turn to me and say, can you just please stop singing and enjoy the music? And so those are factors that become important. But I thank you all for what you bring to the table and for looking at what we're doing as a broad community in the arts, and I appreciate that. Want to remind you folks that this is Central Coast Voices, and thank you for joining us today. We're glad you've been here. It's a production of Healthy Communities. And want to remind you that the choices you make today will affect tomorrow's world, and that's important. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be with you, and she'll be speaking with David Kilburn, who's the executive director of the AIDS Support Network, and the Slow Hep C Project, and also Derek Sisting, who's the Hep C Health Educator for that project. And among other things, they're going to talk about something that we may not really pay attention to, and that is that Hep C is a silent disease, and it's what the most contagious disease we have in our society, not realizing that in the United States. And it affects 1 in 4 Americans, and it's a very dangerous thing. And Chris, who's a great expert on talking about medical topics, will be covering that topic next week. This is Central Coast Voices, a project of UNOVA's Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX. And this program is underwritten through a grant from Joan Gellert Sargent, and we appreciate her support. If you'd like to talk to us some more, Central Coast Voices at kcbx.org is our email address, and 543-2323 is where you can reach us. And again, thank you to Angela, Melissa, and Alan for a great program today, and thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.